Where it came about was in 2022, the IWF had announced that they're going to reduce the weightlifting categories from 10 down to 5 for the Olympics, which has just passed. And that meant that I find some athletes would be able to stay in their same weight category, but a lot of athletes may have to either increase up or decrease down their weights to fit into a weight category. And again, then just anecdotally, I had read and seen just reports from some athletes subsequently how they were struggling with either gaining the sufficient weight or losing the weight to get to whatever weight category. So that's where I said, right, after reading the research, after hearing these, granted they're anecdotal stories, but they're the athletes, they're the people that have to do it, they're the people that this is designed for, they're the people that are working at this. So I designed it for elite and competitive weightlifters, but realistically any weightlifter could adopt this plan.
Hi, Darren. Welcome to
Alex. How are you?
Welcome to Evidence Strong Show. It's my pleasure to have you. I'm very well today. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Hi, Alex. So I'm Darren Delaney, and I'm a strength conditioning coach, performance nutritionist, living and from Ireland. I'm just after starting my second year of my PhD, studying low energy availability and relative energy deficiency in sport in athletes and its effect on health and performance. I'm actually as well just getting ready to submit the thesis for my third master's next Friday, and that's in Olympic weightlifting as well, studying their diets. So that's what's coming up for me. But today, I suppose we're talked about master's number two. Jesus. So
okay. So as far as I'm aware, you did literature review looking at dietary intervention and practices of weightlifters, and then you design a nutrition plan to manage weight, I guess, in elite and competitive Olympic weightlifters. Is that's right?
That's exactly right. It's the thesis was really, it was two papers, the literature review at the start and then developing the actual plan. Between 1989 and 2016, there was 8 dietary assessment studies of weightlifters, but all bar 3 of the studies, they included weightlifters with various other sport type and athlete types. So there was race walkers, there was marathon runners, there was volleyball players, wrestlers, judo, a whole host of them. And sure, the studies, they would show you the macronutrient breakdown and the calorie intake breakdown of the various athletes. But oftentimes what they would do is they would just talk about all the athletes together. Mm-hmm. And it made it hard to see, right, well, I can see what the weightlifters are doing, but is it really of any benefit to them? Is it helping them? Is it not helping them? And it was the same for all the sports. They weren't talking about many. And what I could see is that the weightlifters across the board seem to be consuming a high protein diet, which makes sense when we think about it. They want to recover from the training, they want to develop muscle, they want to build strength. But also what they were doing was they seemed to be taking in a high fat diet. That really going to fuel the performance of the Olympic lifts, explosive whole body exercises? Maybe not, probably not. But also what we were seeing as well is that the weightlifting training seemed to have an aerobic effect. It's like, I'm sure we've all seen the memes and the jokes. What's the most used piece of gym equipment for a weightlifter? And you'll see a picture of a chair. Oftentimes I think it's true. So like the lifter will get up, they'll do a rep or two, maybe they'll do a complex of a couple of derivatives. They'll sit down for 3 to 5 minutes. And then there's research to say or to show that Olympic weightlifting training can have a high aerobic effect where the weightlifters are using 60% of the VO2 max. So maybe the high fat diet, whether they realize it or not, maybe it does help. Maybe it helps with the training session. And training sessions can be anything from, there's research shown that 36 minutes, which would be a very short one, but up to 2 hours or 2.5 hours, some athletes could be lifted. So the high fat diet, maybe it does help. But what I saw across the studies was, bar 2 studies, none of them recommended a dietary approach for weightlifters. And the 2 studies that did was low carb, high fat diets. One in 2017, one 2018. And one had the athletes eat 50 gram or less of carbs per day with an ad libitum fat. And then the other study was 1 gram per kilo per day of carb with ad libitum fat again. And both research groups, they didn't see any negative effect on performance, and they did see significant weight loss. But one of the studies where they reported, I think it was something like 3.4, 3.6 kilos of body weight loss, 2.6 kilos of that was lean tissue. And we can't be promoting weight loss to lose that type of, really, we don't want to lose any lean tissue, but we certainly don't want to be losing quantities of, you know, in and around 2.6 kilos, particularly not when the lifter is putting putting a heavy object up overhead. You know, they need the strength and the mass to get that up there, finish the lift and be safe. So it was from there that I then started to design the high performance plan for the weightlifters.
Could you stop a little bit on the two studies you're mentioning? So the goal of these studies was to reduce body mass, and that's what the diet was designed to do.
They wanted to see the effect of a low carb, high fat diet, and they weren't trying to get the athletes to lose lean tissue.
All right.
That is what subsequently happened when they look back on it. And they wanted to see, would it affect performance one way or the other? And it didn't negatively affect performance. But in one of the studies, the athletes were allowed to pick which exercise they would use as the performance assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't say if the athletes picked the exercise that they prefer most or that they're more proficient with. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But if the athlete did choose an exercise that they prefer more, that they're more willing to do or they're more proficient with, then that could mask any negative effects maybe that had have been there from the low-carb, high-fat diet. But I think the big thing from it was they lost such an amount of lean tissue, and also the athletes reported as well across both studies to feeling fatigued and never fully feeling recovered. And there were both 8 week studies or 12 week studies as well, sorry. So like 12 weeks is a long time to feel fatigued and not fully recovered.
So interesting. Do you know whether it was one repetition maximum measure of performance or some other?
One rep max. But as I say, if that's in an exercise that you're really good at, you're really proficient, that it could just be that has mastered just the person's proficiency and effectiveness with that exercise. And then also you're comparing, you know, powerlifting exercises to weightlifting exercises, and you know, weightlifting exercises, they're a lot more dynamic than powerlifting. Maybe not the same absolute strength, but certainly more explosive, more dynamic, and a lot more for the athlete to think about as well. Like, you have to think your way through a powerlifting exercise, make sure that you get yourself into position so that you're safe and you can perform the exercise well. There's a lot more positions in an Olympic lift, and a lot more chance for, you know, a slip of the mind or a lapse in concentration to have an effect. Where if you could do the study in just weightlifters, just powerlifters, and then have everyone perform the same exercise or the same set of exercises, maybe it might highlight a bit more potential effects one way or the other of low carb, high fat to either direction.
So we have some concerns about the design, about how the study was run and what was found. So that was your starting point. So now you are in a position, okay, this is what have been found in the literature. Now you're starting the quest to design some kind of guidelines that could potentially benefit weightlifters and actually support their sport.
Exactly. That's what it is. And like, part of where it came about was in 2022, the IWF had announced that they're going to reduce the weightlifting categories from 10 down to 5 for the Olympics, which has just passed. And that meant that I find some athletes would be able to stay in their same weight category, but a lot of athletes may have to either increase up or decrease down their weights to fit into a weight category. And again, then just anecdotally, I had read and seen just reports from some athletes subsequently how they were struggling with either gaining the sufficient weight or losing the weight to get to whatever weight category. So that's where I said, right, after reading the research, after hearing these, granted they're anecdotal stories, but they're the athletes, they're the people that have to do it, they're the people that this is designed for, they're the people that are working at this. So I designed it for elite and competitive weightlifters, but realistically any weightlifter could adopt this plan. So I looked at as well the exercises themselves. You know, they're technical, complex, explosive, strength power based exercises and whole body exercises. Yes, the training could have an aerobic effect where a high fat diet maybe helps with the aerobic effect of the training, but also the exercises themselves, they're short in duration. So around about 3 to 5 seconds for a snatch, around about 8 to 12 seconds for a clean and jerk. Yes, there could be variations, a little bit shorter, a little bit quicker, depends on the athlete. But the athlete's could be putting multiples of their own body weight above their head. And then there's research as well to show that athletes could be resisting up to 17 times their body weight in the bottom position when they're trying to complete the exercise. And we can, the research has shown that performance of weightlifting exercises, we can see increased creatine kinase and blood lactate levels, which could impact fatigue in the athletes through, increase the perceptions of fatigue in the athlete through depleted cellular energy in the muscle, which then could impact the muscle's capability to contract or the athlete's perception of that. So they were like the starting points of, right, this is who it's for. This is what has been done, for good or for worse. And this is what the athletes do. This is what the athletes experience. It can be quite complex for the athletes. So in developing the plan, I thought, with the evidence is there, let's try and make it as simple as possible for the athlete and for the coach to implement. So in that, I thought, let's make suggestions for weight maintenance, weight gain and weight loss. So I think there's a lot of research and there's a lot of thought anecdotally within weightlifting where performance is linked to body weight, but it's linked to body weight reducing, coming down. And it doesn't always need to be that way. In the same way, an athlete shouldn't always be losing weight, shouldn't always be trying to gain weight. So there should be gain weight, lose weight, maintain weight. So it was try and make the recommendations based around that, around the exercises, and try build upon recommendations that have been made. So to try make it as simple as possible to implement, like we see that athletes or weightlifters typically will consume a high protein diet. So the recommendations that I made was 1.6 to 2 grams across all three phases. Try keep it as consistently within 1.6 to 2 grams per kilo per day of protein. Then to try eliminate the athlete having to think, oh, how much protein am I having? How much protein am I having? Try have it the same each day as much as they can. And I provided everything in ranges as well, because one athlete will work really well the upper end of a range, another athlete will work really well at the lower end, then you have everyone else in between.
What the usage of protein by athlete, what it will depend on. So why some athletes will work really well on the lower end and some on the higher end?
It really comes down to preference, but also athlete size as well, or what the athlete's goals are, what they're working toward. We could have an athlete who needed to move up, or who chose to move up in weight category, so they need to increase their weight. And one of the best ways for an athlete to increase weight is to try, or one of the more preferential ways is to try increase the muscle mass, so that they have the strength to compete in the higher weight class with what is most likely going to be higher weight on the barbell that they're going to need to perform with. So within the previous 8 dietary assessment studies, we've seen that weightlifters were already doing this. They were already eating high fat diets. I think if I remember right, the lowest fat intake that I've seen across any of the diets was 1.2, and then it went up to 3.2.
Sorry, are we talking still protein or fat?
Protein, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the protein. Yeah, the lowest was 1.2, and then it went up. The highest I seen was 3.2. So the athletes were doing this already. It's like, didn't want to change too much, because there is other recommendations that maybe they're going to need to adopt, or maybe they need to change for moving in between the different weight categories for any athletes that did need to move. And it's like, well, if they're already eating a high protein diet and they need muscle, they need strength to be able to perform and to recover from the training sessions and from competitions. So it's like, let's keep the protein around where they already are and around where the research says for strength power athletes and weightlifters, where we would prefer to see it. And that was 1.6 to 2 grams per kilo of body weight per day for protein. So it made sense to keep it there. And it gave the athletes range to be able to decide. Because some athletes will prefer a lower protein intake and some athletes will prefer the higher protein intake. A range allows the person then to make the choice based on their preference in conjunction with their coach, and then base it on their performance as well.
Awesome. So we sorted out protein. Now what do we do with fats and carbohydrates?
Fats and carbs, they're the ones that are going to change. So keep protein relatively the same, and then we can alter carbohydrate and fat up and down. So for a weight maintenance, if we start there, the recommendation I made was 4 to 6 grams per kilo per day, with fat coming in at 0.6 to 1.5, and that could be based really on preference, because again, you will see that some people prefer to eat higher fats than others. Other people will prefer carbohydrate, and then some people like prefer a mix. And generally speaking, we'll eat a mix. This allowed the athletes again to stay somewhat within where they normally would be, with the research showing that the athletes were typically eating higher fat diets anyway. So with the carbohydrate, they would need to be able to execute the lifts, be that the full lift or derivatives or complexes thereof. The carbohydrate would allow them to perform those lifts. And then the fat then can offer some enjoyment in the diet, but also help with the aerobic nature of some longer duration training session. But one thing that was interesting was where we said we saw higher creatine kinase levels and lactate, blood lactate levels in training. The highest levels were seen during performance of the clean and jerk, which isn't surprising because the clean and jerk is typically going to be heavier than the snatch and it lasts longer. You know, the lift could be twice as long if you were 3 to 5 seconds for the snatch. It could be up to 12 seconds for the clean and jerk. So you're lasting twice as long. So if somebody had a training session, whether this is in weight maintenance, weight gain or weight loss phase, somebody has
everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Training session. And if they're training both lifts together, and if the clean and jerk is later in the workout, I'd suggest that keep some carbohydrate, have an intra-workout carbohydrate snack before the clean and jerk performance to aid with that heavier load and longer duration exercise. And then for carbs as well, like fats can be spread throughout the day. Carbohydrate, if we have a carbohydrate meal, roughly 2 to 3 hours before training session. But again, trial this out away from an important competition or away from important training sessions. So trial it out. Do you perform better 3 hours beforehand having had a carbohydrate meal, or would an hour work better for you an hour beforehand? Trial out, see where you are. If the athlete out of competition, as best they can, try to maintain a body weight within plus or minus 2 kilos of their competition weight, and then aim for a weight gain of around 0.5 kilos, half a kilo per week. So in the range of, and that would be in the range of 0.2 to 1 kilo a week for weight gain. For weight loss, aim for a weight loss of around 0.7 kilos per week in the range of 0.5 to 1 kilos a week for weight loss. And if they can do that gradually over the course of an 8 to 12 week period, it's not too taxing on the athlete. It's not too stressing on the body or the athlete. The research shows weight loss like that shouldn't affect performance negatively, or weight gain for that matter. And in that instance, if we can then arrive at the first weigh-in 2 hours beforehand, we've fueled, we've already weighed down, we know we're going to weigh in on weight. That was the reason for these recommendations, is to try eliminate any additional stress on competition day of, oh, you're a little bit over, you're a little bit under, you need to do this or do that. So we could try arrive there with our plan in place, and we know that we can execute our plan because we know we're coming in on weight, because we've done it gradually over 8 to 12 weeks. We've either lost or gained 0.5 kilos per week or 0.7 per week, and we've gradually come down to our weight category. And again, if the athlete can select a weight category that is within 2 kilos of their natural body weight, it makes it easier. So you have 8 to 12 weeks to lose or gain the 2 kilos to perform. It allows a lot of time so that the athlete can weigh in as they would like on the for that weight category.
So this is the perfect scenario. This is the
perfect, yeah.
What you recommend the athletes should be doing. Let's say that didn't happen and for some reason they have to gain or lose weight faster. What are the risks they running into?
What could happen if someone needs to rapidly adjust their weight up or down, and if it's most of the time it'll be going down, they could be going for dehydration methods or methods of reducing bodily fluids as well that the athletes could be doing, and putting a strain on the body, on the brain, on everything, trying to cope with such losses of mass and losses of tissues and liquids. Could be losses of stomach contents we could see that athletes could be in doing the likes of that. And cumulatively, it's going to have a negative effect, most likely psychologically, on the athlete, as they know, right, the first part of the plan, the very first thing, I haven't even lifted and I've missed that, you know, I've failed that. But also then we could be reducing strength as well, a capability to perform on the platform through reducing these things. And we could then also be causing issues in and around organs and the gut in particular if we're dehydrated. So the athlete then might feel quite sick or quite upset in the stomach on the intestines as well. And we could elevate the heart rate as well, which again can make the exercise and the performance feel harder than it actually is. And it is going to be harder as well. But these effects on the athlete makes what's already hard seem even harder.
Okay, so we went through the maintenance split, did we?
Yeah.
We know that you recommend six, eight weeks to go through the reduction. Now, what the split would be? Protein stays the same?
Protein stays the same. And then for weight loss, it will be 1 to 3, for carbohydrate, 1 to 3 grams per kilo body weight per day. And then for fat will be 1 gram to 1.5 grams per day. And the carbohydrate, let's try to keep most of that before as a pre-workout meal. And again, if it's a longer duration training session, particularly with clean and jerk later in the training session, have some carbohydrate before the performance of the clean and jerk session of the section of the training session. And then for the weight gain, I'm not sure if I said, but the carbohydrate then would increase. That would be 4 to 8 grams per kilo per day, with the fat intake coming down to 0.6 to 1 grams per day. And again, throughout the phases, carbohydrates for the workout, and again for the longer duration, I keep repeating myself, but for the heavy clean and jerk, if needed, carbohydrates intra workout. Not everyone's going to need that, not everybody's going to want to do it either, but that the athlete knows that's there as an option, it can help keep that there if needs be.
So what I'm hearing is protein stays the same, and now if you in a weight loss phase, or if you try to go up, you manipulate mainly carbohydrates.
Yes, exactly. The fat intake, it really doesn't change much. From the maintenance, it's 0.6 to 1.5. And then for weight gain, it's 0.6 to 1 gram for fat. And then for weight loss, it's 1 to 1.5. So the fat really doesn't change too much. It's the carbohydrate that has to change, even though not a massive change. Again, just to go back, maintenance is 4 to 6. Weight gain is 4 to 8. And then weight loss is 1 to 3. So realistically, to keep it as straightforward as possible for the athlete, it's the carbohydrate that gets manipulated up and down throughout the phases.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Would you have any advice on how it will differ female versus male lifter?
That's actually a good question. Yeah, so the research for female weightlifters and nutrition, it's very, very limited. Of the 8 dietary assessment studies, there was in total 137 weightlifters recruited, but only 12 of those were female. That's all it was. And that was, as I say, from 1989 to 2016. So the research in females is very, very limited. The recommendations here, again, because we have the range, I think will fit with female athletes as well, because you can trial out where you personally sit within training as well as within the monthly cycle as well. And you have that range so you can adjust up and down as preference, as well as performance, as well as physiologically. How do you feel? What do you need? How are you performing with this break of protein, carb and fat? I think more research does need to be done in that space. There's been, say, quite a bit done in male athletes. I think that needs to be improved as well.
If we could highlight quickly once again, what are your recommendations for split of macronutrients for maintenance? Let's start and then go through the phases.
So for weight maintenance, protein will be 1.6 to 2 grams per kilo per body weight per day. Carbohydrate will be 4 to 6 grams per kilo per day. And then fat intake will be 0.6 to 1.5 grams per kilo per day. And then for weight gain, protein would stay the same at 1.6 to 2 grams per kilo per day. Carbohydrate would increase then slightly to 4 to 8 grams per kilo per day. And then the fat intake would reduce down slightly to 0.6 0.6 to 1 grams per day, aiming for roughly a 0.5 kilo weight loss over a 8 to 12 week period, and 0.5 kilos weight gain per week in the range of 0.2 to 1 kilo per week. For weight loss, again, the protein stays the same at 1.6 to 2 grams per kilo per day, with carbohydrate reducing down to 1 to 3 grams per kilo per day, and then the fat increasing slightly to 1 gram to 1.5 grams per kilo per day, aiming for a weight loss in and around 0.7 kilos per week, with a range of 0.5 to 1 kilo per week weight loss.
Excellent.
Again, over 8 to 12 week period.
All right. Did we cover everything you wanted?
There was a couple of supplements in there if you want to talk.
Yeah, let's go through them.
There's only the three. It's creatine, cinnamon, and pomegranate.
All right, let's go through them. So creatine first.
So for supplementation, I recommended creatine 3 to 5 grams per day. It can be taken whenever the athlete wishes, as ease, as it would be common for athletes to have like a post-workout shake or post-workout smoothie, something like that. The creatine could go in there, could become part of that routine. It's easy to go in, you don't notice it going in, but realistically it can be taken any time during the day. So 3 to 5 grams creatine per day. And there was actually a systematic review that showed that barbell athletes, so weightlifters, powerlifters, strongmen, CrossFit athletes were included, regular creatine consumption increased barbell 1RM by an average of 14%. So creatine intake, it can help to accrue and maintain increased muscle mass and strength levels as well. If an athlete just first starts taking up, we can see a slight increase in body weight. Once the athlete becomes it becomes more habitual, the intake, we see that increased weight, it levels off. That again, in that systematic review, it showed that the weight gain over time then was non-significant. So there appears to be strength and lean tissue benefits to consuming creatine daily. And again, there's research to show it can be taken in any liquid that the person wants to, you know, anecdotal stuff. But I think there is some research as well showing that you can have it in your tea or your coffee if you wish. You won't notice it's there. Just mix it up well. Make sure that you get it into solution and it should be fine. Another supplement that was interesting, and there was actually research done in weightlifting, which was surprising to see, was cinnamon extract, and it can help with recovery. So the recommendations for that for the weightlifters was 500 milligrams a day, taken in two doses. So 250 milligrams in the morning, 250 milligrams in the evening, and that can help to reduce muscle damage and muscle soreness through decreasing creatine kinase blood lactate levels. And they also seen that there was no negative effects on performance. These are supplements, are to supplement the diet. They're not, you know, you must take these. Absolutely not. These are, if you wish, they would add that extra bit. There's three supplements, and of the three, creatine by far has the most research and the most beneficial effects. But the reason I included cinnamon was because it was studied in with weightlifters, and they didn't show any negative performance effects, and it did help with recovery for the athletes. And as you know, a weightlifter could be training anything from 3 or 4 to 5 days per week, and there could be 2 training sessions on more than one of those days. Some weightlifters would train 3 times a day. So fatigue and recovery then becomes really important. Nutrition becomes really important. Sleep becomes really important. And if cinnamon extract did help just even by some measure, you know, it could be worth exploring for an athlete. And a quick thing to say as well, for any supplement, regardless of what it is, make sure that it's third party batch tested for prohibited substances. That should go without saying for any supplement, regardless. And then another one, it was interesting, there was quite a bit of research, pomegranate juice in weightlifters. It's a high dose. So what they're recommending is 1500 milliliters in the 48 hours post fatigue and training. It's a bit of a mouthful. So it's going to be 750 mil 24 hours after training, and then another 750 mil. So if you did a hard, heavy draining, fatiguing weight session on Monday, Tuesday you'd have 750 mil split into 3 250 mil doses, separated by 8 hours, and then the same again on the Wednesday. And then before you go into your next subsequent heavy training session, an hour beforehand, there's another 500 ml of pomegranate juice. So that's a lot of pomegranate juice going in, and it is a lot of liquid going in, and it's separated out, like the 8 hours separated out. That could interfere with someone's sleep potentially. That having the 250 mil, it might, right before bed, if the person's aiming for 8 hours sleep, because you have to have another dose 8 hours later, would cause the person to have to rise at night to go toilet. But with this one, there is caveat with this, whereas it can reduce people's perception of their RPE, so it going to help things seem a little bit easier for them, or at least they get that feeling. It can reduce heart rate, creatine kinase, and again, blood lactate levels. But the caveat with this is it can blunt redox signaling and physiological adaptations to training. So if somebody was in a training phase or training sessions where the physiological adaptations are the key thing they're looking for, which, to be fair, probably most training sessions, this is what they are. If the priority is the physiological adaptations, pomegranate juice can blunt that. So I wouldn't recommend it in that instance. The only reason, again, I've included it in there is there does appear in the research to be beneficial aspects to it, but it does need to be taken when we're not looking primarily for the physiological adaptations. So yes. there is a big asterisk, a big caveat with pomegranate juice. Have there just if somebody was struggling with recovery and have a hard training week ahead or a hard training phase ahead, it could be something that they could look at to aid with recovery, and then the person might be working more the technical aspects of the lifts.
Or it could be used in taper when the athlete is just done with heavy lifting and now trying to recover beautifully for the competition.
Exactly. And then that can present the athlete then at the end well recovered, ready for that competition.
Interesting. That's something new to test, I guess.
It is. And again, unfortunately, with that one, all the research is done in males. For weightlifting, it was all males again. So again, another area that could and I think should be explored with female lifters as well, because we don't know what we'd see. We could see an even greater benefit. We could see less of a benefit, or it could be the exact same. But, you know, until it's tested, we're guessing. You know, an athlete can trial it out themselves and see how they're feeling.
Thank you so much. Well, I have two short questions to finish. First one is, what is your favorite color?
That's actually a good question. I like that question. It was blue until my nephew, who's 6 now, when he was 2 or 3, his favorite color was green. Everything was green, green, green. And he used to always say to me, our favorite color is green, Uncle Darren. So green's favorite color now.
That's an awesome story. All right. And if people want to find you online, look for your research or ask you a question, where they should go?
For research, you search the name on my name on ResearchGate and ORCID as well. Search my name on LinkedIn. You want to find me on socials, then, I'm looking now because I had to write it down. I forget my own names on it, but it's at Dardale Fitness on Twitter or X. And then for Instagram, there's two. One for like general health and fitness. That's at Dardale Fitness _nutrition. And then there's a food and meals one. And it's at Dardale Fitness _food_meals.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Darren.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me, Alex. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Online sports betting is booming, and so is the harm it causes. Some apps use AI to target young users and encourage compulsive gambling. If you've lost money, developed an addiction, or were underage when you started betting, you may have a legal claim. Davis & Crump is offering free consultations to those affected. No upfront costs. We only get paid if you win your case. Call 866-912-2442 or visit sportsbettinglawsuit.com today. You're not alone, and you have rights.